listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Nerds Assemble episode 244. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
This week we're not talking about anything in particular. It's been a long May, but also has felt incredibly short at the same time.
I think that's just time in general now. I mean, it feels like, you know, a couple of weeks ago that it was the beginning of the year.
You know, I don't think it helps with the fact that A, Easter was really late this year, and B, obviously then a whole bunch of bank holidays. I mean, we're just approaching another bank holiday for Monday, so it helps condense things somewhat. So we're just going to be talking about what we've been up to, thanks to last week's technical troubles making the recording of an episode nearly impossible, because Retro's internet basically crapped out.
Yeah, you was great. Thank you, Virgin Internet.
And obviously, it wasn't quite feasible to try and record an episode on Retroid's data. So it's pushing things a bit far. We were thinking, oh, maybe we could talk to you about the ongoing US and China trade war and its latest evolutionary form today, which was the kind of the order that's been signed in about trading various bits of tech and shit to China from the US, especially Huawei being quite fucked because they're pretty much been half kicked out of the Google ecosystem for Android. But then we realised none of us are economists, and there's plenty of other sites writing coherently about it in ways that we could never talk about it. So, go look at the Register or something like that. But it looks interesting. I mean, I've never wanted to buy a phone from that particular manufacturer. So I don't feel particularly messed over, but it's interesting. That's all I can really say, because I'm not an economist. Or somebody who knows a lot about how dealing and wheeling happens in Silicon Valley.
Anyway,
what we've been up to.
We're all sick of experts anyway, aren't we?
Oh, apparently.
Yeah.
Mm. I'll bring them back.
So, there's at least three things that the three of us have watched since the last episode. Obviously, Game of Thrones.
That little thing.
We have all seen the finale. It's a finale. It's finale-like. I'm not sure yet how I would compare it to other finales.
Well, I was just saying to Retroid earlier that there's actually very few TV series where the finale feels like it's a good payoff. A lot of the time, it's not. It kind of builds, and it goes to a point where no payoff is going to be good enough.
What do you mean, like the final episode of the new Battlestar Galactica, or how Chuck ended, or how Heroes ended, or
keep going,
Mind you, some of those shows also include shows that were cancelled really prematurely and then had almost no room to manoeuvre to wind things up. So,
I mean, you obviously have like different things like, say, for example, Angel, where it basically resulted in like the final episode and the final scene going to, okay, well, they're going to have to fight an army of demons now.
And dragons
and stuff like that. And that's where the show ended.
It was very open.
Yes.
But, okay, so that's all we can say about Game of Thrones. We've also all seen the end of Supernatural Season 14. which yep. I think we have mentioned briefly, but now everyone's seen it. It's not the season's finale, because that's going to be at the end of season 15. But it was a finale.
It was.
Definitely very much setting up things for season 15. I think season 15's going to be unlike any previous season in terms of just how fecking tense everything is.
Good, because, I mean, when...
Nobody's going to be comfortable.
I think a couple of seasons ago, where they decided to basically open up the portal to the alternate universe.
Oh, yeah, so that was like at the end of season 12.
Yeah. I thought that they were going to do more with that. Like, you know, basically opening up a whole range of different, you know, it's like alternate, you know, realities and, you know, universes and whatnot. And
it was pretty much a way to get some of the best characters back that crap writers who've worked on the series just killed off for no real reason or payoff.
I mean...
In my humble opinion.
They did go to one other dimension with that, because it was the Dreamwalker dimension, that thingy with the sphere. I can't remember her name right now.
Spear.
Kara? Is it Kara?
Something like that.
From who would have been one of the main characters from Wayward
Sisters. Yes,
she was from a world different to the Apocalypse world. But anyway.
But yeah, I feel like there's not that much more that Supernatural could necessarily do, per se.
Except for the meta direction that they're suddenly going in for the finale of finales. The final season. The end. The end of all things. And guessing how long Sam Winchester's hair can get in a single season. Or whether or not Castiel's going to finally just lose it and start going around the bunker in slippers or something.
I mean, at least they know that they've got this entire season to wrap up, because it felt like with, say, for example, Angel had a similar thing with a prophecy that was to come true in the future. And so they tried to wrap it up, and they wrapped it up in a kind of unsatisfactory way, I feel.
Okay.
I'm not sure whether you know the one I'm referring to in Angel.
I can't remember at the moment. It's long ago.
It's the one about Connor killing that weird prophecy guy.
Oh, God, I hated Connor. I mean, Jesus fucking Christ.
Hmm.
It's like, if the character brief had been, imagine beige paint that never quite dries.
I mean, actually, if you think about it, Connor and Jack are very similar characters, only I would say Jack's a far more likable character.
Oh, yes, I don't mind Jack at all. He works as the character. It's just, yeah, Connor was... Oh, Jesus Christ.
Anyway.
There seems to be like a recurring theme of basically in kind of sci-fi fantasy shows like this, basically somebody gets pregnant, baby... then all of a sudden, adult baby.
But also, there's a weird-ass, potentially prophetic thing going on as well.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the other thing that we've all been watching and getting our teeth into, literally.
There's another one where somebody's had a baby.
Yeah, somebody else has. At least for season 4. Which is on Netflix. So if you're in the UK, I don't know what it's like for people in the US, but if you're in the UK, yes, Lucifer seasons 1 to 3 is still on Amazon Prime. But if you want to watch season 4, you need to do so on Netflix, because Netflix are the ones that basically bought the show after Fox cancelled it in their bullshit last year. And it's Netflix who basically have... held on to it and enabled it to continue.
Because apparently it had done well for them in the markets where they had the rights.
Mm.
So they thought, yeah, go on then.
But also, like, just going back to bugbears from which we've talked about many times in previous episodes of this show, where basically it's kind of crazy, I think, how the US sort of networks and that will think about how well stuff tends to do in the domestic market, still more than what happens in the international market. And it's like, you're not going to get international markets making this stuff, but they will pay for it and it will do well there. So it's kind of like, okay, I get, well, you know, something might not have been quite the cup of tea for Fox, or, you know, it wasn't football, which is pretty much what it was kicked out for.
Yeah, reading, you know, going back to that whole thing, it was just, it was incredible that they were just pretty much, it's cheaper for us to buy in, like, college sports.
Yeah.
And we can sell the advertising time, you know, so therefore, and it's just...
But can I say that, I mean... Lucifer season 4 is a lot better for going for Netflix.
Yeah.
It feels a lot tighter. It feels like stuff happens at a more brisk pace, so that you're not watching like 3 or 4 episodes a and filler. The plot doesn't, you know, move forward.
I mean, I know I sort of saw one friend commenting on Facebook and he was like, oh, it's not like 16 or 18 or 20-something episodes. It's like 10 for the season. Oh, and it's like, and I was like, well, Netflix never really does that many episodes for a genre show. Like, the most you might get is maybe 12 or 13.
Yeah.
Like, 10's and pretty good.
Most seasons of Lucifer were about, you know, as they call them, half length anyway.
Yeah. Except
so for, it wasn't that far off. Except, then, except, of course, the most recent one, yeah. And that's when they cancelled it anyway.
Yeah.
Golf flop.
So I think, like Paul said, it's really benefited from that trimness. There's a lot less filler, which is great.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's done more with the story as well.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, mid-season and then all of a sudden, such and such turns out to be such and such. And then you kind of have to wait for, you know, like 7 more episodes before it's like... Such and such now knows that such and such is such and such. Instead, yeah. it's a lot quicker.
And the number one thing I liked about it was, you know, my fear with the, oh, Lucifer starts on, you know, Netflix on such and such a day. Well, first of all, it was a Thursday, wasn't it?
Mm.
Which I thought was a little bit unusual because they're usually Fridays where they have the content. But I really hoped that they weren't going to just drip feed the episodes. And it turned out they didn't. They were just all there.
I have to admit, I thought that they would do as well, as in, like, drip feed. And I was like, oh, they've got the entire season. Ooh.
Yeah, it's like, well, hey, I know what I'm watching for the next week.
Do you know what? There may have been fewer episodes, but they made up for it with having longer episodes.
Because
the episodes were
I noticed that. There were, like, 50-odd minutes, several of them.
Yeah, probably because they didn't have to kind of work to regular... TV standards where, you know, you have to kind of plan for ad breaks and shit.
You mean like almost 20 minutes of freaking adverts?
Yeah.
And when you start to notice that structure in American, you know, TV, it irritates you.
Yeah.
Because you have the teaser and then you have act 1, 2, 3, and 4.
It kind of makes the story more predictable as well.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it's like, all of a sudden, you know that, you know, something happens and somebody's in trouble. And then, like, ad break. And then you come back to it and it's like, oh, you know, the trouble's pretty much, you know, kind of alleviated within the space of, like, 10 seconds.
Mm.
Yeah. I noticed the difference with the Stargate SG-1 TV movies, actually. Remember when they did those? They sort of wrapped it up with movies?
Vaguely.
A long time ago.
Was... not something that, you know, we were particularly we've been particularly following, to be honest.
Mm. Well, we were on Sky, so it was basically, you know, they had the whole thing. But I think the first TV movie they did, it was structured to be like a two-parter, or it could be edited into a two-parter, and it felt just like a longer episode.
Mm.
And then I think the second one they did after that, they did it as like they scripted it and plotted it out as a film. And it made it feel a lot better because the story beats were in different places. Just like, you know, you were saying, because it's like, oh, you know, we have to have a commercial break here. So, you know, time it. And, you know, you can alter that by a few minutes, but not by that much. Yeah, there has to be an adverb break there. And when that restriction is removed, you can make them as long or as short as you want, really.
And because you've got the ad break there, you're also going to have to make sure that the action cuts so that there's a reason for people to come back, i.e. like there's a hook for, you know, that's just around the corner.
Yeah, and I remember reading, and it just, oh, that spoiled it a bit now, where in every series where they just have maybe like in a little sting of music, and say if it's a sci-fi series, if it's something like Star Trek, you'll have a little flyby of the ship, but there'll be no speech.
Hmm.
Or there will be a panning shot of a city. They are there for advert breaks. They are there so they can, you know, people can come back in after the advert, and you know there won't be anything, you know, that you know the local station will talk over.
Hmm.
And it's just, it's weird how American, you know, commercial TV has structured a lot of, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's always nice when that restriction is lifted because you notice it.
Oh yes, yeah. Anyway.
Retroid, have you been up to anything else other than those three?
A little bit. I've been reading up on this will be really surprising to everyone. I've been reading up on old technology, and stuff I've been fiddling with lately is I was looking up how to do S-video, which quick rundown of, you know, old, you know, analog video. You have RF, which is just, you know, the aerial picture where you have to tune it in. And then what that is derived from is composite video, which is basically the brightness and color going down one, you know, wire. And that's better than RF, but it's pretty much, it's what your TV would convert an RF signal into to put it on the screen. And that's better than RF, but it's still a bit fuzzy, you know, because everything's squashed together. And then you have S-video, where you have the advantage of the brightness and the color running down separate wires, which means that they both have, you know, double the bandwidth. Because the way, you know, because we all know you got, you know, black and white TV first, and then it got upgraded to color. And, you know, because so many TVs had been sold, it was very, very, very important that black and white and color were compatible. So they, you know, they did that in a clever way, which, I mean, I'll not go into, but it's pretty much the picture is broadcast in black and white in full detail, and then you have a lower detail color plonked on top of that. And in that way, black and white TVs wouldn't be looking for the color signal. They would completely ignore it, and they would just display it in black and white. But the color sets would, of course, you know, they'd get the color brightness, and then they'd get the color information to overlay on it, and everyone was happy. So that's basically what S-video is, where it transmits them separately. There are several old computers in the, you know, the start of the 80s, say late 70s, early 80s, where pretty much the best quality picture you can get out of them is S-video. Because they never expected anyone to use, you know, RGB or, you know, to break the, you know, the signal down in even further than that. So I've been making a cable for my Commodore 64s and Commodore 16 Plus 4s, and also the Atari 8-bit computers as well, so I can get S-video, which makes everything look a bit sharper. It's just, you know, that's the best they're going to get. So I've been doing that. A few days ago, our guest cat, you may have seen me, you know, tweet about, you know, returning home from shopping. This is not my cat.
Oops.
In the window.
Oops.
Yeah, it's our neighbour's cat, Rupert. He comes round and he likes spending time making himself extremely at home. But on Saturday, he decided that because I had the window open in the main room, he was going to jump on the windowsill. The small problem was the windowsill was full of stuff, which meant that he skid, which meant that he knocked over a bookcase.
Oh, blimey.
Which then knocked over my 42-inch TV. I might have said golly. I do have a picture. I did take a picture because it was no one's going to believe me, and also this might be useful for insurance purposes. But I managed to pick everything up, and to my surprise, the TV still works.
Good.
So the cat is still welcome. I mean, the thing is, it would have been welcome anyway, but I would have given him the stink eye for a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was he was absolutely fine. Of course, it was just everything else in the room that he managed to pretty much knock over.
I'm just imagining. Oh, what's the? Because we made one for Gish once, the thingy bug.
Oh, Rubeg Goldberg machine.
Yeah, it obviously sounds like it was one of those, only your TV was the finale.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things which I found amazing is that there's a mini sewing machine, and that was on the floor in front of the TV when I went in, you know, to check the TV. However, the thing is, this was on a small bookcase, which is shorter than the television. Behind the television. Except, you know, but when I went in, it was sitting right there in front of the TV. And it's just, how did that work? Because I wasn't in the room when he managed to knock it over. Because otherwise I would have, you know, stopped him trying to get on the window in the first place. But it's just, how did some of these objects end up in front when they were on a bookcase, lower than the height of the TV, behind it? But yeah, the reason I mention that is that one of the things I managed to pick up a few years ago, thanks to Hot UK Deals, was a mini projector.
Ooh. Oh yeah, I saw the pictures about that.
Yeah, it's very small. It's about the size of a USB power bank. The fatter ones.
Yeah.
But I've had to take it apart a bit because there was a few things presumably broken in the fall. It's like the power jack was broken off, so I've had to get inside so I could solder wires, work out which way round it was, because you don't want to wire a live voltage to ground, all that kind of thing, and vice versa. But yeah, I did that. I've got it charged up because it's got a battery on it, and I've been fiddling about with that, getting that working. And then one of the other things is, would either of you know what I was talking about if I said a space helmet TV? Very 80s thing. You may have seen them on TV series.
Is that like a TV you wore on your head?
No.
Okay, then no.
It's pretty much it's a TV that's shaped like a space helmet.
Oh, no, okay, yes. Visor. Yes, now I can actually, I remember seeing, there was a retro shop in town that definitely had one for sale for a while.
And how much did they have it for?
This was a while ago, so it wasn't retro enough yet.
Yeah. I've seen some quite silly prices for it on eBay.
Did you have your hands on one?
I almost have my hands on one. As in, within 24 hours I should have it. If all goes well. I bid on one on eBay and I've got it for a tenner.
Whoa. How is it going to get delivery for that? It's going to be interesting, though.
Oh, I'm going to be the delivery.
Oh.
I've had to book tickets to get to Glasgow.
Well, at least you're already...
That's what you're doing tomorrow.
At least you're already in the north.
That's what I'm doing tomorrow. Yeah, yeah. Glasgow is only about 86 miles away, according to Google. So I'm within 100 miles of Glasgow and Edinburgh. So there you go, people in Manchester who say you're in the north.
Not the true north.
Exactly. I basically feel like I should be ginger hair and making eyes at Brienne of Tarth. Where's the tall girl? But yeah, I'm in the true north, and I'm going over the wall tomorrow.
Okay.
But yeah, that's a I'm not counting my. My chickens before they hatch.
Fair.
But hopefully that should be a good candidate. It's just, I happen to be talking about it because Gigapunk on Twitter, he's got a lovely retro setup and he's got one of those space helmet TVs. But of course, it's quite old and it only has an aerial input for the picture. So what he does, which is, you know, something I've done in the past as well, if something's only got aerial input, you hook whatever you want to use up to a VCR. And then you have the VCR tuned in on the TV. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I remember having a couple of
Exactly.
like that ages ago.
Yeah, the days when you'd have to do crap like that just to get something, you know, on the TV. But I was looking at the schematics of you know, a very related set, and I reckon I can, you know, give it RGB and composite video, that kind of thing. So we'll see. We'll see if I can manage to do that. But first of all, I have to get the bugger.
Yes, which is where you have to go over the wall.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's... Yeah. I've not been to Glasgow on my own. So, it's going to be new. I've been there several times, just, you know, with friends and, you know, whatever. But I'll enjoy a look around. I can't spend too much time there because, of course, you know, you have to book for, you know, a very specific train to get there, a very specific train to come back. But, yeah. So it's only about an hour and 20 minutes each way. Not bad. But not what I was planning on spending my Tuesday doing.
Okay.
So yeah, that if I get that again, because not counting, but if I get that, then that will be a future electronics project.
Sweet.
Cool. Okay. So, Emily, what have we been up to this week or so?
Okay. So we started getting back into Fear the Walking Dead. We were stuck on season 3 for a while, and now we're almost at the we're on like the last 2 episodes of season 3.
Yeah.
Season 4.
I feel like it has got a bit better. But yeah. Maybe we're just more focused on it or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Season 4, because we're watching via Amazon Prime, and season 4 is available as well for Prime.
I thought personally the low point of Fear the Walking Dead was definitely season 2. Where it just got bogged down, but I thought 3 was a lot better.
Yeah. There's been a lot more there's been more meaningful interactions going on with sort of more long-term consequences.
Yeah.
Like you're seeing like where stuff's happened earlier on or even before the outbreak, and it's kind of playing out, and most often than not, like, screwing things over for everyone. So that's been pretty cool.
Although there are still kind of occasions, because obviously the characters at this point have kind of progressed to the point where they are, you know, kind of, they're in the apocalypse, they know it's the end of times or whatever, and they are starting to build their skill sets and whatnot. You know, they are starting to become proper survivors. But even then, sometimes they make decisions that are like, really? That wouldn't make sense for that character, I don't feel.
You say they went out of character, Paul?
Yeah, slightly. I don't know, maybe it's some plan that's yet to be, you know,
maybe
realised or something. I don't know.
We also went and saw that their Detective Pikachu in the cinema.
Pika.
I laughed, I cried, I laughed some more, cried some more. I feel like Detective Pikachu is probably like extra enjoyable if you're someone who's been into various parts of like the Pokemon Empire franchise or whatever for points in time, because you kind of get what they're getting at, whether or not it's been the games, card games, TV series or the animated films.
Yeah.
It's nice that they're referencing stuff a lot. you know, like looking at the poster itself, and there's a lot of, you know, references to the like businesses and like Pokemon and you know.
I would say that the story does have a MacGuffin that was a bit
MacGuffin.
But otherwise was very enjoyable if you just only allow yourself to squint at the MacGuffin and obscure its vision.
It's good.
As a palate cleanser to watching the finale of Game of Thrones, we tried out the first episode of Tucker and Bertie on Netflix, which is a new animated series.
Is that the one which had me wondering if it was BoJack Horseman?
Yes.
Repeated? Yeah.
But it's not, as far as I can tell. It just happens to be animated animals. Also, the style of animation, like there is a slight difference to the art. It's a tiny visible difference. Like, I would say that it has a bolder use of colors than BoJack did. Whereas BoJack's got, a finer degree of detail in its art style. We watched one episode, then had to have a break. It was quite a full-on first episode. I'd seen a couple of interviews with the show creators and voice actresses. Who I think they've been doing like the festival rounds a bit. I think they might have been at like the Tribeca Film Festival or something, talking about the show.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd seen an interview with them anyway somewhere online. And obviously, you know, they're really proud of the fact that it's been led by female creators and stuff, and like voice actresses, and it's kind of cool. I've yet to identify, I mean, it's only one episode, I might have to watch a few more to see if I can identify with any of the experiences they're going with, but obviously they can't speak for all
women. It does seem like a very much kind of a urban thing.
Yeah, maybe if you live in somewhere like London or something, it might make more sense.
Heck, even just like a, you know, relatively majorish, you know, city or town.
But Bristol.
Yeah, just not Truro.
Yeah, not so that, the middle.
I was thinking that that's basically all of us screwed then.
Yeah. So we checked that out. Like I said, I think we're going to give it a bit more of a go. It's just that it was a pretty full-on first episode. Like, they were obviously trying to really introduce the differences between Tucker and Bertie. Just to show kind of like how they're different. I mean, they're meant to both be friends and at one point roommates. Recently, Tucker's moved out. Whilst Bertie's dealing with living with a boyfriend for like the first time. So that's fun. Paul and I also watched John Wick 2 last night in preparation for potentially seeing John Wick 3. I'm not sure. I really like the first John Wick, which I think Paul only half remembers.
Yeah, I know that involves, like, you know, dead wife and dog.
Yeah. John Wick 2...
Oh. That just reminded me of something else I've watched, so, yeah, carry on.
Okay, John Wick 2 was a bit kind of like... Oh, okay, so we're basically just really just setting up for the third film at this point. Huh. I was kind of hoping that it would have moved on a bit further from the storyline of the first film, but it hadn't. So I wouldn't say it's my most favourite action movie that I've ever watched, which also happens to have Keanu Reeves in it. but, you know, I've also been playing Final Fantasy X on Switch. Still pissed off by Titus's voice. Like those moments of the game where he can't talk much because basically I'm just battling and grinding and just trying to like get loads of AP so that we can move around Sphere Grid. Those moments of the game are fantastic because he hardly talks. And his and it like the, because the way they do the cut scenes, like whether it's full cinematographic or it's the sort of using the more in-game graphics, the in sort of narration that he does, not just the talking, but the narration he does of the story on the side, is actually quite painful at times. It may be it's the English translation, but a lot of it just doesn't translate well. It doesn't sound particularly sort of... It doesn't... Because he's sort of narrating the story of why they end up doing what they do, why he's in the position that he is, and the observations that he failed to make at the time. But he does so in such still like a lack of self-awareness. It's just so painful. I mean, the character's only meant to be 16, but at the same time, it's like, then you shouldn't have, like, put all of this on his shoulders. Then maybe.
At least the story makes more sense than Final Fantasy 13.
Well, this is true. I mean, it doesn't take much to do that. Even Final Fantasy 9 makes more sense than Final Fantasy 13, and 9 had, like, some crazy-ass shit going on. There were tales, man. Tales. You know.
I do wonder if some of the terrible, terrible translation and dubbing is why I hated Tidus.
I also,
to a large degree, hated Cloud as well. It's pretty much it's a Square RPG. That means I must loathe the main character. That just seems to be a constant for me. At least with the more recent. When I say more recent, I mean coming on a disc rather than a cartridge.
I mean, I quite liked Squall. But, yeah.
At least he didn't have... until Kingdom Hearts, he didn't have a voice.
We want protagonists without voices.
Mind you, David Boreanaz did a good job of voicing Squall in the first Kingdom Hearts.
Hang on, what? Angel?
Yeah. Well, Squall in Kingdom Hearts 1, but not 2, but Kingdom Hearts 1. What else have I been up to? Oh, Paul, didn't you play... You've been playing on Switch as well, but you've been playing something else.
Yep, Mortal Kombat 11.
If I may just slide in there and say, wow, is that a game for the Switch that isn't a straight port from something else? I'd slide back out again.
Okay, so it is pretty much a port. It's
but it's a current gen port though, isn't it?
Yes, which is something. It's something.
At which point I will let it off for that because it would be churlish.
I mean, obviously it doesn't stand
wouldn't
up,
stop me.
Yeah, obviously it doesn't stand up graphically to PS4 and whatnot, but it's still a mostly playable game. The reason that I say mostly playable is because I'm sick of a glitch. Where you're playing on the single player mode, trying to do, the towers thing. So the story mode itself, that ran absolutely fine, but the towers, several occasions, I've basically managed to get to the top and beat it, only for it to tell me that it's lost connection with the internet and kicks me out.
Even though, in theory, this game mode has nothing to do with being online.
Yeah. And it's like, you're getting that fucking fixed, mate.
But the thing is, other people have been finding this issue as well, so it's not just us. And it's not on just the Switch.
I don't think so. I think I read somewhere that it was plaguing like PS4 owners as well. But, I don't know, it's been a while since I've even turned it on.
Well, you kind of got frustrated. Yeah, you got really frustrated with it.
I mean, it's one thing, having the computer kick your ass, but when you kick its ass and earn that final fucking cutscene and unlock and whatnot, and then it goes, oh, sorry, you don't have an internet connection. Bye.
When we definitely have had an internet connection.
And it's like, right, okay, so I've just watched, I think it was Johnny Cage's, ending kind of thing. And that's when it went, oh, no internet connection, and kicked me off. So I'd already watched his final movie type thing, and then, went to have a look. Oh, it's still locked.
Yeah. It's really brilliant. Shit.
And it's like, no.
That would explain some of the criticisms I heard where they, you know, people were saying about, you know, connectivity issues.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, presumably that just means it's playing multiplayer, but no, that just sounds far worse.
Mm. Yeah. I think it's really bad that it's relying on online functionality for something like that.
I mean, to be honest, because I think the port was actually handled by a third-party company. And yeah, sometimes those work really well. Like, say, for example, Skyrim. That was handled by a third-party company that was kind of doing that. And several others, like I think the Doom remake and Wolfenstein ports and whatnot, that was, you know, kind of handled by third party. But then you will get some third parties that kind of do a kind of hash of it and just, no, it doesn't
But
work
then again,
as
if
well.
There's problems having PS4 as well, it might just be that their servers are shit, in which case they should have done better server support. But then at the same time, that function of the game shouldn't rely on connectivity.
No, it really shouldn't.
I wonder what would happen if you tried playing that bit with airplane mode turned on. Might be worth trying to find out.
That might be an idea, because it may make an allowance for that.
Because that'd be kind of shit. It's like, oh, like this non-multiplayer, non-technically online part of the game.
It may just turn around and say it cannot connect to server, and then just won't allow me to play it at all.
Well, that would be still a good test, though, just to see if it did that. Yeah. What else have we been doing? Oh, we finally watched Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Got it on disc.
I keep meaning to watch that.
It is a delightful film. I've read a couple of Ultimate Spider-Man comics back in the day, which is where Miles Morales is from.
Mm.
He's a really cool character, and it was just so nice seeing a story that involved spider people that aren't just Peter Parker, you know?
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool, and it had such an electric animation style that made it really fun to watch. And also, like, I might have to just try and hunt down the soundtrack. Sometimes it had a really sweet soundtrack that really, like, genuinely fitted the animation style that they'd also gone for.
Yeah.
I understand now why everyone was going crazy for it when it came out in cinemas. Paul and I also rewatched Venom the other day. Even cooler on a second watch, I'm going to say.
Still not seen it.
It's still a million times more enjoyable than Catwoman.
That's not hard, though, is it?
Yeah, but a million times more enjoyable. I mean, it means it's more than average. It means it's pretty
good. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, okay. Okay, yeah.
You know. Paul and I've also been catching up. Well, basically, which Sky channel is it?
Was it Sky Witness?
Sky Witness has been slowly crawling through The Rookie, which, from my researching last week, seems to be suggesting that ABC have yet to renew it for a second season. But the first season's pretty cool. It's got Nathan Fillion as a guy who's kind of gone through a bit of a midlife crisis and decides that he's going to become a cop. And he's going to do it in, like, one of the most intense policing areas in the US, LA. It's about him obviously trying to become a police officer. It's really cool. The episode that we watched that was on last week was, I think it was, like, episode 9, I want to say?
Something like
that. Tense as heck. A lot. It was, like, second part of a two-part. Like, the first part of the two-part had been pretty, oh, okay, we're shifting gears in this series. And then the second episode of the two-part was just like, oh, ho, ho. Everything went to shit in, like, all the best possible dramatic ways. It was very enjoyable. And then finally, because as I sort of, like, I've been listening to a lot of Planet Money when I've been going to the gym lately, which is an NPR podcast, and they had a guy on the day called Oliver something or other, and he wrote a book. This is like from an episode last year, but he wrote a book called Moneyland, which is about crazy, like, money wheeling and dealings and stealings by the world's elite in developing countries. And I started reading that. So I'll let you know any more. I'm probably going to just be slowly more and more outraged as I read the book. But, you know, that's fine. That's fine. Any more for any more?
Just that Paul saying earlier, dead wife, reminded me that I'd watched, well, we had watched, amongst other things, American Gods Season 2.
Yay!
So, not so much dead wife as dead wife.
That reminds me that I need to finish Season 1.
It's quite good, but it's difficult to go into, really, because it has a lot of stuff going on. It's kind of, a lot happens, but also not a lot.
Yeah. So that also reminds me that Good Omens is out at the end of the month.
Mm. So, yeah, I really quite enjoyed it. One of the, you know, there's a reveal in the series, which was I think in the first episode.
Oops.
But, because in fact, it made me wonder if it had been like a double bluff in the first place, because I thought, you know, it had occurred to me so early on, but it was still kind of dangled. I thought, well, no, that can't be right. I must be wrong. And then it's like, oh, I am. All right. Okay. It's just that it's supposed to be like a revelation, and I'm like, I knew this. But yeah, generally, I really liked it, and it made me think, damn, I should really watch Season 1 again.
Mm.
Because in a lot of ways, more seemed to happen in Season 1. But this season has got more, you know, it's had more input from Neil Gaiman. So I can kind of see where they're trying to go with it. But it's like, yeah, I want it to be successful so they can be more of it and it can be, you know, complete the adaptation.
Yeah. I mean, it's based on a really long book anyway. If you actually try to buy a copy of American Gods, it is one of Gaiman's much longer novels.
It's quite a tome.
Yes. Well, I think that's all we've got time for this week for the podcast. So it is goodbye from...
It's goodbye from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, Paul Blurt, on Twitter's at Paul Blurt.
And it's goodnight from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. You can find NerdAssemble over on Twitter at NerdsPodcast. We're also on Instagram at NerdsPodcast. And you can find us on Facebook as NerdAssemble Podcast. Notes for this episode are over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and a couple other places. And that's it. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.